You are listening to the Politics in Action Report at CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm Emily, bringing you the latest on current political news. On this segment, I will be discussing how Eastern Township communities are receiving funding to promote their cultural activities, the five-year anniversary of the Lac-Mégantic tragedy, and where the town stands today. As well, in disputed waters, how the dispute region of the Machias Sea Island is continuously the center of dispute for Canada and the U.S. And lastly, Ontario and Ottawa at odds with funding for asylum seekers. To begin, I will be discussing some news that hits close to my own home. As you know, the Lac-Brome community, nestled in the heart of the Eastern Townships, has its own charm and character. But of course, some dedication and investment needs to be done in order for these communities to maintain their charm. This news, having occurred about a month ago, has just come out now. On June 8th, Denny Paradis, the representative from the Bro-Missisquoi region, announced $91,300 in funding from the Canada Arts Presentation Fund, the Building Communities Through Arts and Heritage Program, and the Celebrate Canada program. This funding will go to 8 different organizations in the region. The regions specifically are located in the towns and cities of Magog, Sutton, Knowlton, Brome, Broma, and Bedford. With this funding, each of the communities will be able to gain respect through facilitating cultural activities. And this is made easier with funding to ensure these cultural activities can happen. With small rural communities, it is not always easy to dedicate resources into the community's cultural activities, given most larger scale locations, such as Montreal and Quebec City, receive most governmental subsidies for attracting tourism and promoting their own culture. So it's a good thing to see the small towns get a fair share of the pie, so to speak. To me, coming from a small town myself, this is incredibly relevant to build on the communities in the Eastern Townships because, being part of a rural community, the people are what make the community. Consequently, if there aren't any activities to get them together, then these communities will essentially have no quote-unquote community component. Consider an example from my own community. This year was the first year my hometown did not hold its annual strawberry social, partly because they did not have enough volunteers, so people, to make this occasion happen. This emphasizes the point that without people, there are no community activities. A way to incentivize more activities to take place was by investments into the communities themselves. I am also happy to see this investment given there are some Anglo communities and they make up a unique part of Quebec society. For those who know my community of Lac-Brome, the community is well known for its duck festival, author Louise Penny, and its Victorian charm, just to name a few. This funding can really enhance Lac-Brome and all of these other communities and their amazing qualities so as to attract tourists abroad and bring community members together. All Quebecers and Quebecois remember about 5 years ago, waking up on the morning of July 6th and seeing the news report of a train explosion that occurred that very morning. For the citizens of Lac-Mégantic, this would be a morning they would never forget. When a train carrying 7.7 million liters of crude oil would claim the lives of 47 of their own and destroy their downtown core. How is the city today? The city remains fearful. For one, a governmental study conducted in 2017 determined citizens are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And this was a given how intense the accident was, and it was bound to change the community forever. This, in part, is reason why the town desires for the relocation of the train tracks outside the town. For me, this is a reasonable request of the people of Lac-Mégantic, given some are suffering from PTSD. The thing to understand is, with the citizens of Lac-Mégantic, who are suffering from post-traumatic stress, is that anything that reminds them of the event, and this can be something as simple as the sound of a train passing through town, this will offset and trigger past emotions and sentiments that arose during the initial incident. So with some citizens on edge, it is both the provincial and federal government's responsibility to make sure these citizens can feel safe in their own community, even if it means investing in a train bypass. So this is the plan that lies ahead for the town. A 12.8 bypass of the current train tracks to out of town is expected to be facilitated within the next 4 years, and both the federal and the provincial governments will be providing funding for this initiative. I have heard some counter-arguments to this bypass. Some have argued that changing the location of the tracks won't change the fact that accidents happen, even if there are preventative measures already in place. While this is true, the Mégantic disaster does demonstrate that everything can go wrong at the worst possible time. But I will return to what I previously said. It is the responsibility of the governments, in this case, the provincial and the federal, to ensure that their citizens feel secure. Also, this is a manner of compensating the citizens of Lac-Mégantic by funding this initiative, aside from the financial compensation they might have received prior. In other words, this is a manner by which the governments are attempting to relieve the citizens of Lac-Mégantic. While some would argue that some justice was not served in this accident, with the train operator Thomas Harding being acquitted for this whole disaster, I do think there is some justice served in this case, and I'll tell you why. TVA reports the main offices of the Montreal Main and Atlantic Railway in Farnham continues to be abandoned, representing the effects of the tragedy 5 years later. As you know, MMA filed for bankruptcy following a lawsuit against the company after this accident. After the accident that Quebec will never forget, it was a given that MMA would never operate again. The abandoned office spaces in Farnham are symbolic to the industry that also died that night in Lac-Mégantic. To finish this discussion, I will finish with a quote from our very own Prime Minister, who sums up the 5-year anniversary. The Prime Minister had this to say in regards to the town. Quote, "The tragedy left scars that cannot be erased. But in the weeks, months, and years that followed, Lac-Mégantic became a symbol of hope, determination, and solidarity." An island off the coast of New Brunswick and Maine has been the subject of dispute between the US and Canada since the 1700s. This region is the only disputed region between the US and Canada in the East Coast. In order to help you understand the current disputed land, requires looking back at some history of the land itself. Note that this information comes from Atlas Obscura. So with the signing of the Treaty of Paris, the second article in the treaty decreed that the U.S. had rights to any territory within a 20-league proximity off its coast. Later on came founder of Nova Scotia, Sir William Alexander, who made claims that any territory within 6 leagues of the Canadian coastline was considered a part of Canada. With these two contradictory claims, both Canada and the United States have maintained their claims over the Machias Sea Islands. Then, in 1832, the British, now modern-day Canada, built a lighthouse on the island to solidify their land claim and has had Canadian inhabitants living in the lighthouse to guard and keep watch for American, quote-unquote, intruders. And this dispute continuously occurs today. As we have seen in the past few weeks, Canadian vessels have been boarded by American Border Patrol on grounds for searching for illegal immigrants. I would have thought they possibly would be searching vessels for narcotics, such as marijuana, as it is soon legal in Canada. But it appears the U.S. is getting more aggressive on its stance of illegal immigrants. Not only that, it's becoming more aggressive in solidifying its claims to the land. Because I do think it is unlikely to find illegal immigrants coming into the U.S. over Canadian vessels, no less in this region, which is said to as not being a location with expected and high illegal migration rates. To me, I don't believe American vessels have any jurisdiction to search Canadian vessels, given it is a disputed region, and there lacks clarity enough to make this area, as it is termed, a gray zone. So typically, gray zones are mainly sought after by two or more party countries for the reason of resource extraction. For this gray zone in particular, it is lobster fishing. Lobster fishing is one of the wealthiest professions for the reason that it generates millions in revenue. To attain a fishing license alone will cost approximately $250,000. So both the United States and Canada have been fishing for lobster in this region. Typically, the Canadian lobster season would end in June. However, given the revenue opportunity of the industry, the government back in 2002 decreed year-round lobster fishing. This essentially augmented the profit in the industry, and thus makes the gray zone more desirable, especially for Canada, and this initiative can be seen as Canada ensuring its competitiveness to the United States. And actually, most of Maine's lobsters are supplied by the Canadian lobster industries. All this to say, both Canada and the United States have staked a claim in the region for its resource extraction, which is often the center of land disputes. Currently, Canada and the United States both fish in the region and are on a agree-to-disagree status when it comes to who claims this region. While this area continues to be classified as a gray zone, neither Canada nor the United States have jurisdiction over the region. Therefore, they can share the region as long as they do not interfere into each other's activities. Since Doug Ford assumed office at the end of June, he has wasted no time in demanding for Ottawa to compensate for accommodating the amount of asylum seekers seeking residence in the province of Ontario. The entire purpose of this additional funding to the province of Ontario would be for acquiring additional resources to tackle the influx of asylum seekers. This could take the form of housing projects or hiring more workers during the screening process. Ford is acquiring for additional monetary support for the reason he and his Minister of Families, Lisa McLeod, affirm that Ottawa is encouraging illegal border crossers from coming to Canada, and this is not the case. The federal government has continuously expressed that if you are to come to Canada, you must do it the legal way, as crossing illegally slows down the application process. So now, this newsworthy story has become the center of debate, with most people affirming that Ford has legitimacy to prompt Ottawa for the additional funding. However, I do think the entire debate is being taken away from the province that really could use the extra monetary support, especially since Quebec has seen a greater amount of asylum seekers than any other Canadian province. I do think the main party that should be negotiating with Ottawa is Quebec itself. Some may put forward the argument that Quebec already receives a great deal from the federal government. And yes, that is quite true, but if we are thinking in terms of compensation for additional resources, the monetary support is most deserving to Quebec. Okay, returning our discussion to Premier Ford, what we have to realize here is that Ford had just assumed office, and with that, he likely wants to stay true to his promises. As such, any obstacle that is set in the way of pursuing his objectives, he would want an easy solution. So likely he looked onto the federal government as an easy and effective solution to deal with this crisis. As well, this also demonstrates that this is not an issue that Ford is willing to pay for out of the provincial pocket. Likely, as I have said, he wants to stick to his agenda and fulfill the promises associated with it. Because Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Premier Ford have not come to an understanding on this issue, it has become the face-off that it is between the Ontario and the federal government. In response to this predicament, I'd like to take the time to address some misconceptions about immigrants or refugees that some people generally hold. Because it is true, the use of given vocabulary can condition audiences into thinking the matter the way the speaker is thinking, much like the vocabulary used by the Minister of Families in Ontario, Lisa McLeod. I just want to lay down the process of how seeking asylum functions in Canada. In actuality, it is not as simple as people seem to think. People do assume that the Canadian Border Patrol agents welcome asylum seekers with open arms. They see them carrying their suitcases and helping them come through. But the reality is, when asylum seekers cross illegally and without the proper documentation, they are placed under arrest and detained until their file is reviewed to determine whether or not they have an asylum claim. This is why the Canadian government has insisted that if you do wish to come to Canada, you should come legally. Crossing illegally does slow down the process and generally makes the process all the more difficult. At this time, I would also like to clarify that not all asylum seekers gain asylum status in Canada. There is a screening process, like all citizenship applications, that rules out asylum claims if you have been convicted of a crime and if you have been previously denied asylum status in Canada. In other words, once you are out for good. Additionally, there is also the premise that people who do come to Canada are here to live freely and have everything paid for by the government. So, in other words, free riders. There is some truth to this statement, but not in totality, and I will explain why. Yes, asylum seekers do receive funding so as to get their feet on stable ground, but funding towards asylum seekers will stop after 1 year of residence in Canada, or if they have become capable of supporting themselves, whichever of these comes first. So yes, there is money given to them, but it is only temporary as the Canadian government does not have the capacity to support people for the rest of their lives. One could argue, well, we do have the welfare system, which is true. However, it is paid for by Canadian taxpayers, and it does not amount to a lot to live off monthly. So while we do have assisted financial systems, our system makes it more preferable to have a job, as it makes people better off in terms of their standard of living. It seems though, every time there is a discussion of asylum seekers or immigration in general, it becomes a debate. And this is what we are seeing here, with the media going into a frenzy over Ottawa and Ontario with this dispute. And part of the reason this is a hot-button issue is because some people view immigration or asylum seekers coming into Canada as a negative consequence, but I see this as viewing the glass half-empty. There are many Canadians that hold the premise that immigrants steal jobs from Canadians. The reality is, we have an aging population, and Canada's natural birth rate is not sufficient to replace the aging population. Ergo, we need employees from incoming immigrants and migrants in order to support the workforce. As well, not to mention that some companies will engage in racial profiling and discriminate against an employee applicant on the basis of their family name. If we look at this from an alternative perspective, immigration is also beneficial because we can acquire some of the smartest people who desire to live in Canada to fill very important positions such as doctors. Naturally, We want the best of the best to fill the top positions. Lastly, I would like to point out that if we take away the word immigrant, what we have left is people. Conditioning that people are coming to Canada grants greater morality to these people. What I'm trying to say is that the bottom line is that these are sentient beings. Had you lived in a place where there is no political stability, high rates of crime and warfare occurring 24 hours a day, chances are you would flee your own country too and seek refuge in a safe country. I do agree that asylum seekers taking refuge in Canada is beneficial to them, but it is also beneficial to Canada as a whole. So before you put the verdict on asylum seekers, do some research. This really does not have to be a debate. Thank you for tuning in for another segment of Politics in Action. I hope to see you the next time. I'm Emily at CJMQ 88.9 FM.